However, I am full of the fruitage of the Spirit of Jehovah and the verdict and the mighty act of exposing to reveal to Jacob his revolt, also to Israel his sin. That was Micah 3 and 8 for today, which is May 18th, 2025 of the Common Era, and I'm Ward Green with you again today, little children, for our study in the article, Joseph and Own, an article which was written, I have to keep reminding myself of the date because there are many articles. I could guess and I'd be approximately right, but we'd be better off to check. And we see it here, first published February 28th, 2010. And then many modifications were added shortly after that in the year 2010, right? So that's this article that we're studying and which we've been studying. We're now down to the section, and there are no section or paragraph labels in this article. It's one article, so we're at this point of the illustration of, it's about a little more than halfway down, well, substantially more than halfway down through the article, and we're at the illustration, that is, of Henry IV and his son Henry V. The illustration on the right-hand side there, which, maybe I can drag it over, there we go, so we can see it a little more clearly. It's just a very primitive or crude illustration, a line drawing, more or less, with a little bit of shading in some kind of color, but I'm not sure what color was used there. It's an orange-looking color used for shading. Other than that, it's a line drawing of the crown, it looks like, being presented from father to son. Oh, the label for that illustration needs correcting. It applies to the next illustration, which we're coming to after this paragraph. Well, I should fix that. I will fix that. I'll make a note of that. The caption for the illustration of Henry IV and V needs correcting. So in 1098 of the Common Era, which is our Common Era that we live in now, the year's 2025, but back in the year 1098, which was, well, 1400 years ago, Henry V became king of Germany. As we begin reading our paragraph, he was the fourth and last ruler of the Salian dynasty, and he ruled in the last phase of the investiture controversy. And we'll find out what that means, why that's important. Investiture controversy has to do with the power invested in the church or in the state by the church, or these kind, it has to do with the separation of the power of the church from the power of the state. But to be quite frank, I have not really studied the investiture controversy very much. I've not done that. This is merely important to us for one reason, and that is that it was the end of the divine right of kings that came about because of the investiture controversy, and that's why it's so important to us, because we're going to see there's a mirror date. The mirror to this date, 1098, is King Saul. His year one was, we originally decided, exactly the same year, 1098 BCE. He was the first king of Israel, and that was his year one. 1098 of the before the Common Era. So that's the mirror date, exactly reflected in the mirror of the turn of the common era, with that being the mirror. The number is the same number, but it's on the other side of the turn of the common era, which happened between 1 BCE and 1 CE. It changed from before to after the turn of the common era. Or, in other words, the common era began in the year 1, right? But on the other side, 1098 BCE was the first king of Israel. So that's significant, because there's a king in Germany that began to rule in 1098 of the common era 1400 years ago, right? Another more than 2000 years ago is when Saul ruled. So what are we now? Did we say it was 1400? It's not 1400 years ago. It's 2000. It's not 1400. That would be if we were living in the year 2500. But we're not. We're living in 2025. So if I did the math, it's 2000 minus 1100. So it's about 900 years ago, right? So I was incorrect when I said 1400. It's 900 years ago. Okay. But then we have to add another 2,000 to get back to BCE. So it's about 2,900 years ago. Right? But if you take 2025 and just add 1098, which is the year of Saul on the other side of the common era, we'd get 2,000 plus 1,000 roughly is about 3,000 years ago, right? And more. And so let's continue reading. The investiture controversy led to the end of the divine right of kings in the 20th century. Now, obviously, you know, if I prepared more thoroughly, I wouldn't make a mistake of 400 years in my calculations, but I didn't make a mistake in what I wrote. It's only what I said that was wrong. But the amazing thing here is also keep in mind, we later on decided that King Saul possibly began to rule not in 1098, but in 1100 BCE. It's still very close to this same date of 1098. But we don't have to forget it, because our original idea, our original date for Saul might be correct. 1098 BCE might still be correct. It was just in our later analysis that we came up with a possible revision of changing it, and we changed it to 1100 BCE. Still the same number, basically, within 2 years, right? So, but the incredible thing is the end of the divine right of kings was the consequence that eventually happened in the 20th century, which is 1900 and something, when it was the abdication, right? But it was called a non-abdication of the last of the Habsburgs. That happened in, I believe it was 1918 or 1914, or it was around about the time of the First World War. The non-abdication, they called it, of the last of the Habsburgs. And that was the end of the divine right of kings at that point. But here, at this time period, the investiture controversy, that was the beginning of this end of the divine right. Because it had to do with the separation of church and state. Now, let's read on. A more fitting mirror to the beginning of a divine right, held duly by kings of Israel, might scarcely be imagined. The mirror, that is, right? Yeah, to the beginning of a divine right held duly by kings of Israel, when Saul began to rule. That was the beginning of the divine right of kings, because God had appointed a king for Israel. That was the beginning of the divine right of kings, literally. Because of the divinity being associated with the God of the Bible. That's why we're saying this, right? We're not trying to be denominational, but the Bible being an important, but more than important book, being the best-selling book of all time, being the only book that has the complete record of man's history, the only book of its kind, right? So the Divine Right of Kings comes from the Bible, is what we're saying when we say this. Now, the mirror to that would be the end of the Divine Right of Kings, which is reading on that separation of church and state later wrought during the rule of Henry V by the Concordat of Worms. And you see why we're not getting into that, the details. Because there's enough to talk about without getting into the details of the Concordat of Worms. By the way, that was held September 23rd, 1122, I write here in the article, of the Common Era, 1122, September 23rd. And I did a little research back in the BCE time period just to see what was happening in 1122 BCE. Well, Judge Samuel began to rule, according to the article that we wrote called The Crucible, Part 2, in 1112, and he ruled for 14 years, Judge Samuel, ruling as judge until 1098, according to that time that we wrote that article, what we believed at that time. Later on, we said maybe Samuel began to rule as judge in 1114 because he ruled for 14 years according to an historian named Josephus, and we don't really know, other than from Josephus, we don't have any knowledge of how long Samuel ruled as judge. But the 14 years could be from 1114 to 1100, which is another possibility we later on examined. But around 1122, looks like we have Samson here judging during the time of the Philistine oppression. He judged for 20 years, and that Philistine tyranny, I call it here, Samson was growing up during the first 20 years of that, and that began 1152 in our chronology, which we've established through rigorous, detailed research about the period of judges that enabled us to really, really remarkably, miraculously, I would say, we miraculously, because it was a really immensely difficult problem to solve the chronology of the book of Judges. And I had no clue how I was going to do it at all. I read everything that I could find on the internet. Many bizarre theories about all sorts of different chronologies before the real answer came about, partly because of the 300 years of Jephthah, which is very useful for establishing that 300 years had passed since Moses had led the Israelites as far as the Promised Land, which event happened at the end of their wilderness wandering in 1452 BCE. As our chronology says, this is from our own research, right? And it's, I mean, we don't have time to, I mean, I constantly have to reassert our chronology because, you know, there are many other chronologies that would say that we're wrong. So we have to constantly reassert it. We know that. But we have to constantly prove it, too. We know that. But it's a lot of work, right? You have to constantly prove, constantly reprove, constantly. What we don't have time for is to refute all the wrong chronologies. We don't have time to refute the mainstream. We don't have time to do that because that is a huge, huge energy drain, not to even speak of a waste of time. Now, the Divine Right of Kings that we talked about as virtually, in some sense, ending in 1122 with the separation of church and state. The Concordat of Worms separated the church from the state in the year 1122 of our era. And that's the mirror to King Saul. But King Saul wasn't, of course... maybe Saul, let's see, when would Saul have been born? You know, that might How old was Saul when he began to rule is another question we might have. I don't think we know that. That part of the story is partly at least missing from our Bible texts, but or our manuscripts, that is. And there's some controversy about even how long Saul ruled in the Bible, in the manuscripts of the Bible. Now, I'm trying to keep track of our time here. But I mean, it's a pleasure, let me say, to be back with you again after having taken a bit of a holiday. And I don't know when, how often we're going to be doing these studies, but the springtime is a very busy time. And I was out whacking weeds yesterday, just in the window before the rain came. And I mowed the lawn for the first time a few more days ago. That was a big job. That day I had to go shopping and do all sorts of things. Get my car out, I think, for the first time also the same day. Everything I did in that day was a phenomenally important, you know, thing for springtime. And did it all in one day. And then I had to work cleaning the north wall of my house by climbing a 20-foot ladder. I wasn't up at the top of the ladder, but there was wind. That's why I couldn't go all the way up. But there wasn't very much mold on the top, but there's mold on the aluminum siding, so I had to clean that mold. And then I noticed just yesterday I got this moldy color, this wood color that looks like moldy color, coming up in the wood on the front panels of my house, which is, it's wood. Beautiful cedar originally, but this strange stain color coming in the wood. I don't think it's anything other than just ugly. It's not harmful, but just very ugly. And it's not all that prominent, but that's something I now have to consider. When am I going to replace those panels or paint them, or how to do that? You know, I mean, it's going to be a project. It's going to be an engineering thing. And these things are not complaints. These things shouldn't be. These things are challenges. They're exciting. They're fun projects, and that's how everything should be. I was up a ladder, did that in one day. I cleaned the whole north face of my, some 300 square feet or something of wall with hot water and a bristle brush, basically. That's how I did it. That's all I did. I mean, there's a bit more complexity to how I heated the water, but without getting into that, there was no chemical used in any of this to clean that wall or anything else I did. But that was a huge 5 hours of up and down a ladder. That's what that was for one day. Then the next day I had to mow the lawn and go shopping and get the car out and install the battery for the lawnmower for the first time in the year and all that stuff. Everything in one day after climbing a wall for 5 hours. So now I notice, front wall panels need replacing. But I think that's not something you rush into. They just look bad, but they don't look that bad. And there's temporary solutions. So there's another problem I have too with the bathroom fan. There's an odor coming from the bathroom duct. I think it's some animal fell in there and died or something, and that's what it has got to be put up with, or else I have to open up the whole thing, which I don't really want to do because I think it's going to eventually just die. The odor will die. Eventually it will just go away, but it only has odor on a hot day. You know, when that thing heats up, I guess, and the process continues. But for a while I had that sealed up so that you couldn't smell anything coming out of it. But then I couldn't use the bathroom fan. So eventually the smell died down and I opened it up, but now there's still a slightly undesirable smell. I wouldn't call it unpleasant, but it's not desirable. So that's another issue, right? All these issues, but you never know when the next thing will happen. In English, we say the next shoe will drop. We don't know when that's going to happen. And then when that happens, we have to sometimes pay attention to that problem, whatever it is, when the new problem that comes up. It was 2015 when I first, through my research, put on these wall panels. So they've been there about 9 years. And the porch I built the year before that in 2014 out of the same white cedar. And it's been stained for years, a certain dark red, and it's, there's no mold problem with the cedar that I know of. I just, it's just, also the nails that I used caused a problem. That rust from the nail, because I didn't use galvanized nails, unfortunately, that spread up from the nail holes, and it could even be just caused by that, something that spread through the wood, because the wood is still alive and it spreads whatever. It's not even, but it's nothing like anything serious. That the wood's not rotting, nothing like that. So this is the front panels, and they're just sort of boxed in panels of two big ones, three smaller ones, and one above the door. So back to the article. If we look at this year 1098, rather, but we also can see the Divine Right of Kings was abandoned by the earliest 20th century. If, we can look it up later, but the non-abdication of whatever his name was, the last Habsburg, ruler, the year 1098 is nearly the midpoint of the time period 1075 of the Common Era, when the Pope and the Emperor had first come into conflict, and 1122 of the Common Era. So what is the midpoint between those two? Well, 25 and 22. 1100 is about 25 years after 1075, and 22 years before 1022. So the midpoint is about, like we said, 1098, right? 1098. Today's photos folder number is 1198 for some reason. But when the Concordat of Worms put an end to the investiture controversy in 1122, that was the end of this period of this controversy that had gone on for about 47 years there, beginning in 1075. So it's exactly in the time period of the mirror date, right, of 1100 in the BCE years, which is King Saul. That's another mirror date. We have so many mirror dates. We've got 1452 being the beginning of the rule of the Frederick III. He was the first Habsburg Holy Roman Emperor, I believe, right? 1452. 1493 was his death, and 1493 was the exact mirror to the Exodus date, Israel's Exodus from Egypt in our chronology. So we've got all these mirror dates, 1452 being the arrival of Israel to the Jordan and crossing of the Jordan by Joshua and Israel in 1452 BCE, and Frederick III began to rule as Holy Roman Emperor in 1452, I should say, of the Common Era. That's another mirror. We got all these mirror dates that are just amazing. Now we can talk about something a little more interesting, maybe. Pleasant, perhaps. The DC-3 weather vane at Whitehorse International Airport. We have a picture here, the caption for which was erroneously placed on the other photo as well, or the other illustration. But the weather vane, they've put an airplane on a post that swivels, and they're using it as a weather vane. And so the wind will blow the airplane in the direction so as to point out the wind direction. It's a big airplane. This is an airplane. As far as airplanes go, it's a small one, but I flew on one of these airplanes from Goose Bay, I think it was, Labrador, where we picked up our connection and flew on this plane as far as the Montreal airport in which we landed in this thing. But we had, I'd been in Europe and we had landed in Reykjavik, Iceland, because one of our engines on the jet we were on, a charter jet, I was on a charter flight, you know, to return from Europe, failed. And because of a bird getting in the engine, the jet engine failed, and so the pilot decided to land in Iceland and pick up a new plane that was lent to us by the Icelandic airport there, you know. And so we flew as far as Goose Bay, Labrador, but they wouldn't fly us all the way to Montreal, so we picked up this airplane, the DC-3, a very loud plane because it's a propeller, you see. I mean, it's loud. You would think a jet plane is even louder, but these earlier planes were very reliable and they just didn't have a lot of acoustic sound deadening, I guess, so you could really hear these engines all the time you were flying. Very loud. But the most reliable airplane ever flown was the DC-3. And anyway, let's continue reading. In 1936 BCE, at the age of 17 years in our chronology, all these things from the Bible were able to be established with our chronology assisting us with the absolute date of 1936 BCE. When Joseph was made a slave at the age of 17 years, when his brothers sold him into hands of traders, an account that's given at Genesis 37. Maybe we should look at that. We must be nearly out of time here. Yeah, we're getting close to being out of time. So let's go to Genesis 37, which Joseph was 17 years old in verse 2. It says right there, yeah. So that's the right chapter. And we read the whole chapter, which would take some time. They sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 silver pieces in verse 28, and eventually these brought Joseph into Egypt, Genesis 37:28. And we know from the price of slaves, we can see how it changed over the years, right, through inflation, it went up. And using the price of slaves on a graph, we even did that in one of our articles. I think it was in the Crucible article. The price of slaves was shown to be proof of when the Tower of Babel occurred, because the price of slaves back at the Tower of Babel was zero. There were no slaves, right? Maybe we can find that. We're just about out of time anyway, so I kind of want to find that. Let's look up price of slaves or something. Price. It's not in that. It's got to be in the first part. If it's in this article. Here it is. Slave prices in ancient times. Yeah, I even found it. That's pretty exciting. I found the graph. So you see the graph? At the time of Joseph, you see, he was sold right there in 1936 BCE. So we graph it right here. Right here on the graph, it's just about 2000, but not quite 2000, before the Common Era. There's the turn of the Common Era there, on the right side of the graph, the right edge. And then we have the price of a slave was 20. What's happened here? There we go, 20 shekels at that time. So the price is on the vertical scale, and the date is on the horizontal. So 1936 is right here, the 20 shekels, and then we see the graph is a perfect, almost perfect straight line. As inflation led to the increase in the price of slaves over the years, and we can therefore extrapolate back, and we find the Tower of Babel date agrees with our own chronology around 2700 BCE, right? Which is perfect according to our graph of the price of slaves. That was a remarkable thing. It was partly because of my scientific training that I decided to use the Bible to do that. But that's from the Bible. We got the price of slaves, right? Let's see. Where else did the price of slaves come from there? Well, Genesis, we got it from Exodus as well. The time of Moses, that is. And Menahem, king of Israel, as well. And then there was the third dynasty of Ur. One of these prices came from about 2300 BCE. But most of them from the Bible. Okay, so he was transported to Egypt by a caravan, Joseph was, in 1936 BCE. That's what our chronology has established. And we've gone to great lengths to establish it, prove it. But I think we should come to the end of our study now and not worry about this too much more, except we might read this conclusion here. The Bible says he was sold for 20 pieces of silver. The mirror date to that is 1936 of the Common Era. A year, another faithful servant was beginning service, which was the DC-3, the airplane. About 32 years after the Wright brothers, a remarkable airplane began its service, 1936 of the Common Era, the DC-3, Douglas DC-3, world famous airplane. So that's it for today's study. Thanks for joining us in our reading today and our consideration of our chronology once again. It's been a great, great privilege of mine to share with you some small amount of what I've learned. And, oh, by the way, this is Khaki. A day date automatic watch, and this is a quartz watch, tiny Timex watch. I've got a Timex watch. That's right. So they're saying bye for now, but the Timex watch, it's a chronograph, whereas the day date is Khaki. It's a day date with a beautiful wide date. Having a wide date with the day of the week written fully out, in completely. And it changes instantaneously. It's like about 5 minutes and 8 seconds or something before midnight. Every night just changes in a split second. The day of the month and also the day of the week change really fast. So it's impressive. And I've wanted this watch for a while, but I just didn't think it was attractive enough for me to buy it for a long time. But then I finally got around to it. It's not inexpensive. This is not an inexpensive watch, but it's a field watch, very durable. And the Timex is it's got a wonderful retrograde flyback chronograph. I love the flyback feature. So that's all for today. I love you very much. That's thanks for listening and watching. Bye for now.